to the call. I'm just turning on the live video stream, so bear with me just for a moment. It's so good to be with you tonight for another version of our Tuesday night celebration of life. Always love to be with you on Tuesday nights. Tonight we're going to be talking about finding joy in the journey, something that's so important for the time in which we live. For those of you who are visiting with us, we want to welcome you. Each Tuesday night we get together and we talk about one of the qualities of an intentional creator, connecting with people, how to mentally create in such a way that we get inspired ideas and impressions and solutions to challenges that will ignite our passion. Then we bring that passion into physical creation, where we do the work without counting the cost or tracking the time. And we find miraculous things happening there when we're in action. And then we talk about discipline and structure, and tonight's topic, joy in the journey. And the next week we'll be taking on self-esteem. I'm so excited. I've reported this a couple of weeks now, but I want to share it with you again because we're getting really close. We've gone back through the first 210 pages of the manuscript. We're down to the last chapter on self-esteem, which we'll be discussing next week. It's perfect timing to polish that chapter and have it ready. The plan is that by the 1st of November, which is next Monday, we'll have this ready for the editor. Very excited about this and the opportunity to get these principles and these experiences into people's hands. It's just so many people having challenges in their lives in so many ways. If it's not relationships, it's finances, sometimes it's all of those things. What an opportunity for us to step back and take a look at our lives. We're all so busy, are we not? Sometimes it's hard to catch our breaths, just doing whatever is necessary to keep life moving forward. It's so important that as we're doing so, that we have a mindset that supports this work of creation, that which we don't get to skip, that we can find joy in the journey. And we're going to talk about this tonight. What do we do so that as we go through each one of the days that we wake up in the morning, we're going through the process, not everything turns out the way we're supposed to. And the truth of the matter is life has its challenges. It's just part of living in what we call this mortal existence. We don't get to skip them. Matter of fact, August told us in several of the scrolls to embrace them, expect them, so that when they do come, we can handle them slightly differently than we might if we're in resistance and rebellion, resentment, which holds us back and robs us of growth opportunities. So we're going to take on a number of these principles that are tied directly with finding joy in the journey. I want you, if you have your assessment, to open it up. In your assessment, there are some measurements on the right-hand side. We're going to be addressing these very measurements tonight. The first one is grateful. Excuse my throat just a moment. My apologies. This isn't a matter of whether we are or not grateful. It's a great thing to know. This assessment isn't saying you are or you're not. It's simply saying there might be some thought processes occurring that sometimes impede our ability to feel grateful, especially if this measurement is orange or it's red. Grateful, meaning that we are living present in the now, loving what we're doing, excited about our lives. When we have expectations, we'd like things to be different than they actually are. We might have a tendency in our thought processes to have dialogue that sounds like, you know, by now I thought it would be. By now I thought I would be. And you can fill in the blanks with those comments. And so we might be less than grateful just because we're a little frustrated with where we are. This is particularly true today with those who have created great success and the economy has just whittled away at their assets. As I wrote in the book, that their balance statements are slipping through their hands like water through a sieve. And all of a sudden they're looking at where they are and what it's going to take to recreate what they once had. And it can just be terribly discouraging. Well, we're going to talk tonight about accepting what is, really dealing with what is, because we want past loves or past lives or past incomes or past health. It's not where we are. It's not the here and now. And the creation, intentional creation, always begins from where we are, right here, today. Well, I want to start with one of the great sources of joy in the journey. It can be dear friends, just good friends. Friends can turn into companions. Companions can turn into committed companions. And committed companions can turn into partners. And having a partner to go through life. I was on the phone this afternoon with the chairman of the board of a company, and we were talking. He spent some time with us last weekend and with Ramona. And we went to lunch together on Saturday, and he was mentioning that one of the ladies had come up to him, someone he had great respect for, and said that she'd spent some time with Ramona and could just feel something special radiating from her, radiating through her eyes. Just wonderful to be with her, and it's so true. It is so true to have an unselfish and giving and caring companion. I want to tell you a little bit about Ramona. I felt impressed earlier this afternoon to talk about this. I'm concerned about doing it, but for only one reason. I don't want any of the ladies that are on the phone beating themselves up or wondering why they're not. That's not the point. The point of sharing this is having an objective, somebody we might want to be like. The chairman said, you really had to do a sales job to get her. And I said, that's only half of it. I have to keep doing the sales job. Kevin Hall says, I outpunted my coverage. All of these are very true. I want to take you to a few really key pivotal moments in our life and share with you how she showed up. Because many of you are starting to or may go through or have gone through these very kinds of pivotal moments. I remember when we were building our estate in California, and I went from selling insurance, which transitioned beautifully into a large medical management consulting firm, and I was investing in real estate privately, and many of my clients wanted to participate. They wanted to take advantage of that marketplace, and it became so popular that I sold the practice and began practicing real estate development with just a handful of select clients who had the resources to take it to an even higher level. It was a very exciting time. It was a time when I wrote in the book that we were the alchemists, turning every coal-rich plot of ground into gold. It just seemed magical. And then in 1986, Tax Reform Act was signed, and there was teeth put into some of the tax benefits for owning apartment buildings. And by 1988-89, things were falling apart, and buildings lost 20-30% of their value, much like homes have now. And that's very dangerous when you need to refinance them, or you're building one and you need to get financing. It was no longer just based on rental income, and then the vacancies started to go up, which compounded that problem. Needless to say, we lost everything. And in my attempt to protect our employees, who had been with us for a long time, protect our company, our reputation, our lifestyle, all those places, we ended up $1 million in debt. So now everything's over, there's $1 million in debt, and what do you do? Well, we reached a point where we had to cut back on lifestyle. We had to let the gardener go. We had a full-time gardener, Carlos, wonderful person, been with us for, a decade, I guess? And Ramona's comment was, that's good. The boys can now learn how to mow the lawn. Well, the truth was, that's what I did. When I was a child, I worked hard. I worked in the yard. I mowed the lawn. I wanted my children to have other opportunities than just learning how to work hard. And in fact, I was robbing them. It was ego. We lived in a place where the kids in the neighborhood didn't have those kinds of jobs. They were done by those in-house live-in gardeners. The children didn't mow the lawn. They didn't pull the weeds. They went to science fairs and computer fairs and those kinds of things. Well, she said they need to learn how to mow the lawn. That was tough on me to have my children out mowing our lawn in this beautiful estate in Mount Helix, California. Then it came time to let Socorro go. She'd been with us for the better part of almost 6 years. Legal alien, green card. Cooked, did all the housekeeping, And Ramona's comment was, good, I get my kitchen back. Now, I'm not sure that she really felt that way, but it was what was. It wasn't an option. Now, she could have said, well, that's terrible. Go earn some money. Get this thing fixed. I don't want to be doing these things. But in a companionship that's turned into a partnership, both parties are putting in all they've got in energy and attention because the relationship they share, the love they share for one another, transcends everything. Ownership of homes or cars or gardeners or housekeepers transcends it all. It is priceless. The commitment is 100%. 100% in every way, emotionally, physically, financially, spiritually. This is the person that we have chosen to spend our lifetime with on this planet, regardless of what happens, health or our financial well-being. And in that commitment that we will have our eyes on this person, that our passion will be saved for this person. This is a person that will love and will endure and will adore and will lift and will build. That it'll, as a result of that commitment, build a level of trust in a relationship. Trust that is so easily destroyed. So easily destroyed. And gentlemen out there, oh, that you be careful. Women too. But there are some things that we can engage in visually that can really damage trust. And in a partnership, it goes commitment first, then trust is established. And as a result, intimacy is sweet and tender. It's not a sporting event. Oh, it's going to be fun and playful without getting too personal. But it's very sacred. It's the ultimate expression of the feelings one has for this person that they love and adore with all of their heart. Wouldn't this be ideal? Now, I remember the next moment that comes to my mind is when we were pulling away from the house and we had just sold an 8-foot wingspan eagle. The talons were just lifting off this gigantic log, this beautiful brass eagle. And we left that there in the entryway. The owner bought it right off the truck. Beautiful grandfather clock that we had purchased in Manhattan 5 years earlier. Those things were gone, two of my treasures. We needed the money. We just desperately needed the money to make the trip to where we're headed. And I pulled out of the porte cochere by there and came around the front of the house, and my father was pulling around behind me, and here comes Ramona across the front of the house, and she's got our children, and the van is swaying back and forth. They're singing camp songs. Now, I know, because I caught a glance from Ramona, and the glance said, because I was weeping, I had tears dripping off my cheeks, just a blubbering boob, and she was just strong as could be. She was saying, I'm being strong for the kids. I'm with you. I wish we could just hold each other. This is painful. We're leaving our dream home. But I'm going to be strong for the children because they're going to be confused. This is going to be difficult for them, so I'm going to be strong for them. I could just feel that from her. That's what she did. It made my burden so much easier to carry, knowing that she was handling that piece of the burden. We came to Utah, because this is where we had been producing our educational films, and I was going to be pursuing a career now as a writer and a director. It seemed logical to be in the backyard where we had done all of the editing and some of the filming of the projects we had done in the past. And I began looking for a home. Our children were with my parents, about an hour and a half away, and we began looking. We just couldn't find very much. It was very discouraging. We want our children to be in a good neighborhood where education was valued. Good people, solid people. They didn't have to be wealthy people in the sense of material things, just good, solid citizens. And one night we were sitting at my sister's home. She happened to have us stay there. It was so kind of her. And Ramona took off her diamond ring, a ring I gave her 10th wedding anniversary. My Rotary brother, who was a jeweler, had designed it for us based on an idea we had, and it's so beautiful on our long fingers. And she took it off, and she said, sweetheart, you know, this really doesn't fit our circumstances. All I'll wear the one that you gave me when we got married. Take this one and sell it. And let's use the money to buy a house. That's Ramona. Now, I can tell you that I didn't really fully appreciate the magnitude of that experience until I sent the chapter telling that story to my agent. Margaret McBride said, "Oh, David, you need to tell this in a little bit more detail." And I read Margaret's email to Ramona about how incredible that sacrifice was. And I needed to handle it a little bit differently, her instructions. And I looked over at Ramona, and there was a tear coming out of her eyes, and I watched it just roll right down her cheek and then just drip. Her lips were quivering just a little bit. It's the first time I've really felt at a very, very deep level such a sense of gratitude for that one sacrifice. You know, I'm thinking, well, I made my sacrifices. You know, we can do that. How selfish of me to have not seen that sacrifice. Now, I look back after that. We spent the next 10 years paying back $1 million in debt. August 2000, when we paid the last $14,000. And I can tell you, in that 10 years, I never once heard a complaint or a judgment. Now, she says the reason why she didn't is she trusted that I would figure it out. I'm grateful that she did. But I want to share with you the real truth. She gave me room to create it. You see, when we are critical of our spouse, in any way whatsoever, can it be about weight, it can be about habits, it can be about snoring, it can be about anything. When we say one of those critical, harsh words, it robs the person of just a little bit of the energy they need to actually correct the problem. Ramona's always known, I'll come around if she gives me enough space. And with her unconditional love, I am motivated to show up a better person. Just to meet her, just to be worthy of being in that space. This is a great secret for all of us to learn. See, we want joy in the journey, and we're getting it from friends, companions, partnerships, these people close to us. And I'm particularly discussing tonight Ramona as a committed companion, my sweetheart, my queen. It's so important for us to know that the joy comes from lifting and building, and then having someone reciprocate and lift and build you. And if everything is about lifting and building, that doesn't mean you won't disagree. But you can have a very wonderful conversation if the very first thought is to not do anything or say anything that would crush your mate. If it is about lifting and building, and then they show up lifting and building, this isn't fantasy world. This isn't a fairy tale. This is when two people love each other enough that the words that are spoken are always honoring and always kind. Always honoring and always kind. Well, they weren't always with me. We've reflected on a time. During that 10 years, I would work very hard to get some money in the bank account. And when you're paying back $1 million in debt and trying to support a family of seven, it drains out of the bank account really quickly. I used to be able to pride myself of being able to predict the balance of every single account we had. I was on touch, on top of it. And there were times when we would deposit the funds, and then I go to check the account, and it's just not there. And I go, where's all the money? Well, what I didn't know, and I'm sharing it with you tonight and being quite vulnerable, because I just know this is happening in too many homes. Ramona took the responsibility for paying the bills, writing out the checks, budgeting the money. And when I questioned where the money was, what I was questioning was Ramona's competence to handle it. And she was gracious enough for me to finally come around and see it. It took a couple of years. I did, I wept, because I had been crushing her 2 or 3 times a month by calling into question, where's the money? There was $300 here. Now there's only $11 here. And I could look in a register and see it all. I could figure it all out or see what it was, where it was spent. But I was just, it was just my frustration speaking. I was just frustrated. And she was gracious enough to let me be frustrated, but very privately. Very privately, it was wounding her. When I say that she gave me space, I got to see her crying once because of it. I got to see her cry. And then I knew. That's when I knew. If anybody on this call tonight is having a struggle financially, and you're in a committed companionship, have honest and direct conversations about money management, because that's a part of the partnership, is having common bank accounts, managing money, and making decisions, not unilaterally, but bilaterally. Sometimes men want to give women budgets, like, you got $300 to buy the food and run the house, and I'm going to take the rest and do what I want to do. And seldom can they really solve all the problems with that money, and they got to come back and beg for more money as if they're an employee or on a welfare, in a welfare state, talking to the king. I would encourage all of you that are in committed companionships to handle money issues together. And in all matters, know that if one of you has responsibility, the other wants to be very careful, will want to be very careful about what they say about how those decisions were made. Because when emotions are really strained due to finances, it's so easy to rip away at those tender underpinnings of trust and peace and safety. This is the one place in our homes where our companion should be the safest. The safest. Now, I spent a lot of time doing assessment debriefs with women and men. It is just a little scary to find out how some men show up in their homes. Gentlemen, with all the strength I can muster without sounding inappropriate, oh, let us love our companions. Let us be open and tender and kind and thoughtful. Let us speak kind words. We're not in charge. A partnership, by its very nature, legally, is called equal and severable, which means both have equal responsibility for the whole partnership. And equal and several responsibility. Each partner's responsible for 100% of the partnership. And it's bilateral. It's a joint decision and effort on almost every major thing. If that's not happening in your relationship, I'm going to encourage you to begin some conversations, particularly if you're the controlling one, to sit down maybe tonight when you finish this call and ask your companion, what's it been like to be in a relationship with me when I'm controlling the finances, or I'm critical about the way you do things, or I'm always harping about you spending too much money to run the house? How does it feel for you? And really listen and feel. This is quality number one at its finest, intrinsic validation. I'm safe by listening. Without need to fix or pounce or justify or defend, I'm safe because I'm really listening, because I really want to know. I create a safe place by asking questions that demonstrate I know where they are. They know that I know where they are, and I didn't try to fix them. This is just a wonderful thing, because when this is present in a relationship, there's something almost unspeakable that can transcend almost any challenge. I was getting ready last night to do some stuff in the garage, and Ramona mentioned to me that she'd received a call from a friend of ours and found out that he just got divorced within the last year, and I could hardly catch my breath. His wife wife was a Ramona. Beautiful children. I can't imagine what created this disaster over a short period of time. I was just heartsick. I talked about it last night as we're going to sleep. I was heartsick again. Just weighed heavy on me. I just felt sad. So sad. Both for what he's going to miss out on and what she bet her life on and lost. Her dreams have been shattered. And she's not young, nor her children. So, gentlemen, let us show up differently. It is really time. Financial challenges expose the very best and the very worst in us. Let it be the very best. The very best. This is the single greatest source of joy in the journey. Great friends. Having companions, committed companions. Partners. Partners in this journey. It's just a wonderful thing because it's hard to carry it all by yourself. And when you have a committed companion working by your side, there is so much that can be accomplished. Well, thanks for letting me indulge a little bit tonight and talking about Ramona. When we have people come up to the cabin, either for a couple's retreat or some kind of a training or just to be together for a weekend, and I ask them their favorite part, I can always tell you, first thing out of their mouth is just being with Ramona, just being with her. Let us be that kind of person, totally focused on service to others, finding our joy in lifting and building. Ramona didn't sacrifice herself on the altar of life. She just gained everything. You can see it in her eyes, and you can feel it when you're with her. I just pray I can be worthy of her. And let us be grateful for our companions tonight. Let's have some tender pillow talk tonight. Some tender talk. Notice things you may not have noticed before. Like, incredible dinner. Wow. We think it. Sometimes we don't say it. And it's incredible because someone sacrificed to make it, for an example. Sometimes it doesn't matter which mate prepares it, which mate does the laundry. When's the last time we opened a drawer and said, thank you for that being there? Let us be grateful. Let us feel this peace. This is so joyful because firestorms can rage around us. And if this one's working, everything else can work. Now that's one. Two. The very word gratitude can be somewhat confusing. What does it mean to be grateful? Especially if we don't like what we currently have. Sure, we can step back and find good things in it. Well, at least it's not this bad. Or at least I have this. Or we had a roof over our head tonight, so if it rains, we're okay, or the heat's on. That's really not what gratitude's all about. Gratitude is a much deeper concept. Gratitude is when we take a look at what we have in our life. Let's look around. It's our physical health. It's our relationships. It's our financial condition. It's our career. It's all these things we have in our life. And we say, okay. Not a focus on what I don't have. But gratitude is when we focus on taking what we have and creating the most we can with it. That's gratitude. When we acknowledge the gifts we have, grateful for the gift. When we choose to create the most we can with it, we honor the giver of the gift. Life will shift. I will promise you, your life will shift the day we stop focusing on where we want to be so much or lamenting past mistakes, and we begin living in the now, fully present, focused on taking what it is we've been given, our greatest gifts, our talents, challenges, and and we use it to create the most we can with it. I call this the clay. You can even hold your hands. If you're on the video, you're seeing me hold my hands. It's like I'm holding a big loaf of bread in the palms of my hands. This is the clay we've been given. This is what we have. I get comments from people often that will say something like, I'm doing better at accepting my clay, but sometimes I hate my clay. Well, I think it's okay for us to say, I'm not done with my clay. This is not where I want my clay to end up. I'm going to take it, and I'm going to create the most I can with it today. And when I do that, I'm honoring the giver of that gift. I'm not wasting time just being busy. I'm certainly not looking over at her clay or over at his clay and wishing that I had a skinnier body or thicker hair or whatever it might be. I'm not wasting any time wanting something I cannot have. I'm going to spend all my time and energy on taking what I do have and creating the most I can with it. This is just a great, great blessing. A couple things will happen. One, you'll start to find joy in the journey because you'll be focused on the very things that bring joy. Where you take on a task, you complete it, have a sense of accomplishment. You unleash your natural talents and gifts. You get to know who you really are. Can you feel it? And as you're fully using all of these gifts, this magnifying, if you will, this clay you've been given, it's been my experience that we're given more clay. We get more. There's a way to get more. We'll never get it wanting somebody else's. We'll get it by fully maximizing our own. So let us tonight make this commitment that we're going to look around our circumstances and say, you know, I don't really like this. My house may be underwater. My car may be delinquent in its payment. My retirement account may be over, you know, wiped out. Whatever it might be for your circumstances. As you're considering these pieces and you're going, or I need to lose some extra weight, or I hate my boss, or whatever it might be, just look at what it is. Say, okay, what can I create with this? And in the morning, when you wake up in the morning, we've been through this, power sessions, pick three times during the day when you're going to take this and magnify it in the service of another person, stepping into their world, truly listening, creating a safe place, taking down their walls of resistance, leaving them better than we found them, leaving everyone we meet better than we found them. And start to feel the joy that comes from living this way, the connection that starts to show up, the inspiration that begins to flow. And you'll see why this is the only place where we experience joy in the journey is being fully present in the now, taking our clay and creating the most that we can with it. So let us be focused in terms of gratitude on accepting what is so that we can then begin the process of creating the most we can with it. We are not to be satisfied. Og said this in scroll number 4. So there's a flame that burns inside me that's a constant irritation to my spirit to be better than I am, and I will be. I will fan these flames of dissatisfaction and proclaim my uniqueness to the world. A little bit later, he says, I'm on this earth for purpose, and that purpose to grow into a mountain, not to shrink to a grain of sand. Henceforth, I will apply all of my ability to become the highest mountain of all. I'll strain my potential till it cries for mercy. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Not just to be busy, not to work hard. It's not about those pieces. It's about creating the most we can with what we've been given. That's where we find the joy in the journey. Sometimes we just want to skip all this. We just want it to be given to us. We just want the end result. Well, bottom line, that power that governs the universe is never going to grant something to us that would rob us of the very process that causes us to stretch and grow and become all that we can become. It will never happen. It is a violation of every law of creation. So let us not ask for it anymore. Let us engage in this process. So those are two of the major ways of finding joy in the journey. Being in a committed relationship and turning it into a partnership defined by bilateral decisions, total commitment, trust, and intimacy. kind words, lifting, building, opening doors, tenderness, thoughtfulness. And second of all, taking the clay we've been given, whatever those circumstances are, and creating the most we can with it. This isn't a contest to see who has the most at the end. This is truly a contest to see who did the most with what they've been given. Everybody got that? Og says that in the scrolls. I'm not competing with someone else. I'm competing with myself. And sometimes we see things other people have and we get jealous and frustrated and overwhelmed. The truth is, if we knew somebody else's circumstances truly, seldom would we trade places. Seldom would we trade places if we knew the truth of it all. Well, let's go to the third one. This third one is a little complicated. And that's the fact that we're going to have joy and we're going to have sorrow. I shared, I believe, last week that the previous weekend from when I traveled down to St. George to be with my sweet mother. Stage 4 breast cancer, second time around, been 13 years, but this one's a tough one. She's got a tumor the size of her fist right underneath her esophagus in her lungs. She's had her sixth course of chemotherapy this week, and we'll be on the phone when we finish this call just to see how she's doing. You know, it's interesting. When we were there, my father, he said, a woman's work is never done. He says, I would never be a good wife. But he's so cute. Because it's given him an opportunity to serve my mother the way she served him for all these years. And he has done so graciously. It has been tender to watch. My mother talked about it. Some things she hasn't felt for decades. My father's a wonderful human being. But this kind of trauma has brought something really sweet out in him. My mother's been a rock her whole life. She's just been a rock. We didn't know how big of a rock. I mean, we just knew she just did what was required. Until this happened, Ramon and I were sitting at her feet for the better part of 2 days. I never heard a negative word come out of her mouth. Nothing. It was always positive and fun, and she's got a great little laugh. Her head's now shaped bald, so she wears caps or a wig, and got a cute picture I posted on our Facebook page when we got back last week. These moments are going to come. I saw Susan Sunbrunnen this weekend. She came in from Atlanta for a meeting. First time she's been out of that area since she got her third-degree burns on the fronts of her legs and her feet. She's got her skin grafts now. They've taken. Her donor sites are healing. They've got special stockings for her to wear. She had her slippers on. You know, she didn't walk very far because walking is really hard for her to do with the skin grafts right on the curves of her feet, I mean the upper legs. And you watch these people in sorrow and pain and joy, and they look at these experiences differently. They don't choose to get stuck in them. They don't choose to go into resistance and resentment and frustration. I've shared with you on this call that Susan, when she first had her burns, was so grateful for the fact that it happened at a friend's home and how they jumped in to help her. I got to meet her friend who was there, who put her fire out on her legs with her own bare hands. She was close to one of the best burn centers in the country, grateful for that. Her husband came to her rescue 4 hours away. She was grateful for that. She's just grateful for everything. Even though the pain was on a scale of 1 to 10 and 11, she said it was worse than childbirth. I've shared this as well, but it's worth repeating. She said after a couple of weeks into this process, the doctor told me it's going to take a year to heal. A year. And then she smiled. I could hear her on the phone with her little chuckle. A year from now, we'll be laughing about this. So why don't we start laughing today? I smiled, got off the phone, went to a chapter in the book and wrote the story. Susan's in my book. I've been so deeply moved by her. I'll talk some about my mother, but that's an ongoing challenge, and we're not sure the end yet. But I look at people who have been through these kinds of challenges, who know joy and sorrowful moments, to be conscious that they're learning every lesson they can possibly learn while they're there. I watch these people draw closer to their companions. Their dearest friends show up in their lives. They find great joy in this moment of sorrow. And they know that the way they show up in their sorrow is going to impact everybody else who's watching. Isn't it wonderful? Last Wednesday night, we were on a call with Kevin Hall and Chad Hymas. And those of you who are on that call, and we invite you to go to my Facebook page. I think there's an email going out tonight that's got the call for this next Wednesday. Harvey McKay, a New York Times best-selling author, is going to be on the call. Kevin's asked me to join him again, and Harvey, last week was Chad Hymas. You know, 10 years ago, Chad had a 2,000-pound bale of hay break his neck and leave him crushed for life. He's in a wheelchair. He's quadriplegic. Last year, he traveled 500,000 miles and gave 300 speeches, and almost always traveling by himself. He has to get himself dressed in the morning. It takes an hour and a half to do it on a regimented schedule with healthcare nurses that show up every 48 hours and other very private things that must be taken care of on a regular basis. Very complex. I've traveled with him in speaking engagement. Positive, kind, thoughtful, with everyone, everywhere. These people inspire me to be a better person. If you're currently in a challenge, you have two choices. One, get stuck in the victimhood, feeling sorry for ourselves and wanting to have everybody understand where we are. It's understandable. But, you know, just kind of sucking the energy out of everybody because we're empty. We need our cup to be filled at the expense of everybody's three or four drops they've got in their cup. That's all they've got left, and we're taking it all. Or we can rise above it. It's no small task. It's no small task. The nurse was on the phone as a surprise last week. The nurse that met Chad at the helicopter. It was being brought to the emergency room. And she talked about picking the hay out of his hair while they were stabilizing his body to minimize additional trauma. We can choose. We can choose to rise above it, in the middle of it, and be an example to others. People need you to show up that way. Could be your companion. Could be your children. Could be your neighbors. Might be people at your business. That when you just rise above it, I'm going to learn from this. I'm going to demonstrate to other people they can get through it. And then lastly, one of the great things that comes out of sorrow is that we have our own little mini Gethsemanes, if you will. We get to experience the pain. We know what it feels like. And it helps us to listen differently, to hear things differently. And we find joy in our journey because the depth with which we can connect to another human being, which can only come as a result of having experienced the sorrow. It's not a bad thing. Joy and sorrow are inseparable. As Khalil Gibran said, well, one sits with you at the table, the other's resting on your bed. And they just change places. They're inseparable. We're not going to have a life without sorrow. And again, this is what harrows out our heart and it makes room for even more joy. This is a great blessing in our lives if we understand it for what it is and how it can bless us all. So in joy and sorrow, let us, if we're in the middle of something sorrowful, take courage. And I might tell you, I'm speaking to myself today. It's been a long day. It's been a long day. We traveled a bit last week, and we kind of doubled things up a bit to make up for it. And it's been a glorious day, but it's been intense. And just before I got on this call, I turned to Ramona and said, "Oh, sweetheart, it's hard to live like this. I'm really exhausted. I got to tell you, just being with you tonight, the feeling of your energy has lifted my soul. You've lifted my soul. I feel energized when we finish these calls. So grateful that we have this time together. And definitely a need when this call is finished to turn to Ramona. and apologize for putting that burden on her, because she has had a tough day too. And I haven't heard her complain at all. But she bears hers and often listens to mine. May we, in terms of those challenges we're facing, be conscious of everyone around us. Now, just one last thing for the night. When this kind of an economic challenge occurs, it is very easy to get overwhelmed by what we would call the mundane, the repetitious. We go to work, go to the same place, we check in, you know, we log in, we work, we go to lunch, we come home. We get the routine can become monotonous. We may have had a dream to create a home-based business, and it just didn't work out the way we had hoped, at least not as fast as we wanted it to. We have all kinds of anxieties weighing on us. And we can start to hate our jobs. Hate our jobs. And then we start thinking about that greener grass over there on the other side. You know, it's like, how come they don't have any groundhogs or whatever you call those things, weasels, what do they call those things? Gophers, thank you. Thank you, sweetheart. Gophers or snakes or spiders. Like they never have to mow their lawn or pull the weeds or fertilize it. Until we get over there and we see there are just as many holes in the ground over there as there are here. I've given this advice so much in the last little while and to such amazing results. I say advice, I say that cautiously. Just an idea. Here's the idea. Fall back in love with what you're doing for your job. Fall back in love with it. Don't worry about how much they're paying you in terms of what you're giving. Go and give all you have. Be all you can be, creatively, physically, emotionally. Be it all. Because that's who you are. Be you. Not for their benefit, for your benefit. You'll receive more joy taking your foot off the brake and putting it on the gas and going full speed. You'll meet your gifts and talents, and you'll get excited. Whether somebody else sees it or not or pays you for it, it doesn't matter. You are only punishing yourself. We are only punishing ourselves when we hold back. Well, they're only paying me X dollars an hour. If they want to pay me more, I'll do it. What a tragedy. We're robbing ourselves of the opportunity to learn how to be an intentional creator. Because what you learn when you go full speed can be applied anywhere in the world to any job or profession. But if you're holding back here, wanting that to succeed, you'll go home exhausted. The chemicals, molecules released in our body when we're intentionally holding back, it takes a lot of energy to hold back, especially when you've got so much capacity stored up. It just takes energy to hold it back. Chemicals released in our body actually fatigue the cells, fatigue them. And then we go home and we look at that easy chair and, you know, we promise ourselves we're going to work our home-based business that night. We don't. We get in the chair, we watch television, and pretty soon we're there for the whole night with the promise that we'll do it tomorrow. But we know tomorrow never comes. It's always today. Always today. If we fall in love with our jobs and we come uncorked and we give it our all, we come home exhilarated. It actually takes less energy. And we feel so whole and complete and real and genuine and authentic as a human being. And we're more prepared to move on to the next task, whether it's being with our family or building a business, whatever it might be. We're more available because we truly gave it our all. This is an important piece because sometimes we are looking for that greener grass, not only in jobs, but sometimes in life. Sometimes we bail out on what we're doing, thinking that if we go to the other side of the world to take care of poor children and starving children, we'll feel better about ourselves. And the truth of the matter is we take every unhealthy habit of thinking we have here, there. We just do. Now, there might be a momentary euphoria, but eventually all that wears off and we're just back to the grind. Let us, I'm going to borrow a line from a wonderful man, let us lift where we stand. Let us do all we can do here, right now. Let us show up to work tomorrow with a whole different approach. It's not popular to have a good attitude at work. Isn't that tragic? It's not popular to give your all. Isn't that tragic? Who is giving this advice? Where is this energy coming from? It certainly isn't from any source that's good. It certainly isn't from any source that wants you to build and lift your life. I can tell you right now, Og talked about this in scroll number 5. I'll read it to you. He says, I will avoid with fury the killers of time. Procrastination I will destroy. That's a powerful word with action. Doubt I will bury under faith. Fear I will dismember. Those are great words. With confidence. Where there are idle mouths, I will listen not. Where there are idle hands, I will linger not. Where there are idle bodies, I will visit not. Henceforth I know that to court idleness is to steal food, clothing, and warmth from those I love. I'm not a thief. I'm a man of love, and today is my last chance to prove my love and my greatness. I will live this day as if it is my last. We want to have joy in this journey. I've shared with you 4 really powerful principles. If you're in a companionship, be a partner. Lift and build. Unspeakable joy. Accept your clay. And then focus on creating the most you can with it. You don't have to be happy with it. Just know that is your clay. Now create something magnificent with it, and you'll get more clay, which makes it even more rewarding. In terms of joy and sorrow, sorrow is just part of the journey. If we see it for what it truly is, a great teacher, we'll choose to be taught. We'll choose to teach others when we're in it, and we'll use our experience to better understand what somebody else might be suffering, all 3 of which will bring us joy in the journey. And lastly, in terms of trying to find meaning and purpose in our lives, let us lift where we stand. Let us fall back in love with our career, our job. See how we feel about ourselves tomorrow night when we come home. And don't let some naysayer, some person who chooses to destroy their life, destroy yours. Og talked about this in Scroll 8 when he said, multiply my value 100-fold, that I'm likened unto a grain of wheat. I've got 3 options. I can be put in a sack, dumped into a stall, and fed to the swine. Think about that. I can be ground into flour, made into bread, broken open and devoured by the will of others. Or 3rd, I can be planted in the darkness of the soil. My inabilities, my insecurities, my fears, my failures. I'm going to nurture my mind, nurture my body, sucker the seed, suck seed, have it sprout into 100 grains of wheat. May we, if we truly want peace of mind, Og said that in Scroll 9, I hunger for success. I thirst for happiness and peace of mind. Lest I act, in this case, act like a partner. Take what you've got and create the most you can with it. Consciously know when you're in the middle of sorrow and embrace it. And lastly, find meaning and purpose by falling in love with what you're doing. Lest I act, I'll live in a life of failure, misery, and sleepless nights. I will command, and I will obey my own command. I will act now. Well, now you know some of the secrets for finding joy in the journey. It never comes in avoidance, never comes in escape and avoid fantasy. It comes through engagement. May we have the courage to do so. Because if we do, we'll experience the joy, and the joy is unspeakable. I was with a client on the phone Monday as he wept. I'm going to write his story. I have his permission. I'm going to put it in the book. I've already written the chapter, but I'm going to put it in there anyway. Crushed by his financial situation. He had signed up for accepted a contract with a very large contractor. Excuse me, performed the services, and they've been dragging him out for 120 days. just chiseling him. And he's got $500,000 in receivables out. Payables to his vendors. People, his suppliers, people who have given him stuff to use for that job. And he can't pay them. And he's just so distraught. He was so overwhelmed. And we've been talking about taking this piece on. And he did last Friday. He just picked up the phone, shut his office, and made phone calls to 95 suppliers. 95. Didn't get through to every one of them. And those he didn't, he wrote them a quick email, explained where he was, what was happening. And he shared with me that when he got done that and finished the emails on Saturday, he started getting emails back. I should read this one email. He gave me permission to read this. I won't tell you who it is, but I'll read you the email. If I can find it really quickly, because it is absolutely a moving email. Oh, where is it? I know it's here somewhere. There it is. This is a man who was just so distraught by owing so much to so many. Good man. He hadn't really owned his goodness. He was just feeling guilty and full of shame and embarrassed. And this is what he got back. They've been corresponding. This is the final email. We have been peas in a pod since day one, and there is nothing that is going to come between us. You're a very special person, someone I really look up to. And I feel as though my business and life started to take off after we started working together. This is a supplier. It was not a coincidence. Thanks for always being there for me. It meant a lot. We'll get through all of this together and be even stronger for it. Again, thanks. He said he went out into his truck before he drove home. And he said, I'm not a praying guy. I just never been there. I just looked up to heaven and just said, thank you, and wept. That's unspeakable joy. But it came from taking action, accepting the clay where he was, and creating the most he could with it. He couldn't pay them any money because he hasn't received any. But he could do that, proactively do that. And it brought such unspeakable joy in the midst of a horrible firestorm, one I would not wish on anyone. Let us have the courage to take this kind of action. Now, next week, we're going to take on... Oh, by the way, we're going to read this week, as we're finding joy in this journey, I want you to read scroll number 3. I will persist until I succeed. I'll avoid despair, but should the disease of the mind capture me, I'll work on despair. I'll work and I'll toil. I'll keep my eyes on the goal above my head and ignore the obstacles of my feet, for I know that where dry desert and green grass grows. Chad was talking this last week about his wheelchair ride from Salt Lake City to Las Vegas, where he's going through the desert counting stripes. One night, 6,000 of them. Where dry desert ends, green grass grows. It just does. May we have the courage to do so. Read scroll number 3. And next week, come prepared. We're going to take on self-esteem, the last of the 6 qualities. What causes those challenges? How do we repair them so that we can feel whole and complete, real and genuine and authentic, without the need to impress and pretend and feel ashamed and fear? Dr. Hartman called that the most difficult challenge in our mortal existence and the highest level of maturity. To have that kind of peace. We'll take that on next week. Well, you've got some homework to do. A lot of it's going to be just conversation. If necessary, mending some wounds. Let us not let the firestorms of life destroy those things that matter most. Well, have a great week, everyone. We'll be back with you next Tuesday night for another